Hello there, sex fans, and welcome back. Today is Wednesday, February 18th, 2009, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge.
I was told you were impressive for a boy of 17. I'm Eleanor, who might have been your mother.
Oh, wait till my real mommy finds out about that. No, I'm your host. I'm Dr. Dick. I'm delighted to welcome back my distinguished guest, Dart, for part two of our chat about power exchange, BDSM, and role-playing. He is the Toronto-based, yet internationally known and respected bondage artist, educator, leather title holder, and dom. This is my new series of podcast interviews called Sex Edge-ucation. It's all about the fascinating world of fetish sex and kink and alternative lifestyles. We'll touch on topics both familiar and exotic. We'll chat with prominent educators, practitioners, and advocates of unconventional sexual expressions and lifestyles from all over the world. If you somehow missed part one of this amazing interview, look for podcast 99 on Dr. Dick's podcast page. You'll find a tab for that page at the top of drdicksexadvice.com. And be sure to visit Dart on his website, dartsdomain.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library. You know, even though I get tons of email from folks looking for my advice, I can only respond to a limited number of inquiries at any given time. But that doesn't mean I don't care about everyone who writes in. I do. That's why I've set up my how-to video library. My video library is the go-to place for all you who have sexual performance questions. It's also a wonderful resource for sexual enrichment programming. Say you want to know a little bit more about one of the topics we're covering in this series, BDSM, fetish sex, swinging, and the like, you'll be able to watch all kinds of deliciously entertaining, delightfully enriching, and oh-so-informative videos right from the comfort of your own home. How sweet is that?
That's clear, concise, and well-presented.
Why, thank you. I try. Check it out. You'll find a link to Dr. Dick's how-to video library right there in the header of my site. Look for the tab that reads Video on Demand. So, without further ado, let's get back to Dart, who is patiently waiting for me to shut up. Welcome back, Dart, and thank you for joining us again this week.
Thank you for having me back. It's great to be here.
I'd like to pick up where we left off last week.
Yes, absolutely.
And what I would like to do in terms of going just a little bit deeper in terms of BDSM or power play or whatever we're going to call it, and define some more words like scene, negotiation, and safe word.
Okay. So a scene would be a very all-encompassing term of the actual play period from beginning to middle to end. Mm-hmm. You know, whether that be it starts at 6 p.m. and it ends, you know, 8 a.m. the following morning when the paper comes and coffee served or you know, what have you. You know, that's be what that describes. Let's see, negotiation would be the parameters agreed upon by all the participants ahead of time. This would be where the dominant is asking the submissive, do you have any back problems I need to know about? Do you have a bad gag reflex? You know, do you have any health issues that I should be aware of?
Are you a big crybaby?
Yeah, well, you know, not all information is going to come up. But like, for instance, one of the things that I ask if before I'm about to do a big bondage scene with someone is I'll ask if they've eaten, mm-hmm. And if they've hydrated themselves, because like when these endorphins get moving, if a person hasn't eaten all day, they're going to get a severe low blood sugar reaction, and it's going to become harder for them to communicate.
Right.
With me, and they're also, you know, they're apt to you know, get more numb where the knots are holding down their limbs or whatever. So, you know, things like that. you know, other things like, oh gosh, you know, I was a POW back in Vietnam, so I'm not real comfortable being blindfolded by it. Well, you laugh, Richard, but
it's true what you say. Absolutely.
Absolutely. And then you might also ask, are you on anything right now?
Substances, we're talking, yes?
Exactly. Or did you just have a couple of beers, you know, right before you started playing? Mm-hmm. Because they may be agreeing to things that they normally wouldn't agree to if they were completely sober, but they've also hindered their ability to communicate accurately with you. So that's also really important.
Yeah. Interesting. So you would not advise anyone that is impaired to involve themselves?
Well, okay, so I'm going to do the politically correct things and say, no, I would not advise it. Uh-huh. Okay, but I'm also going to then admit that I myself have played after having a couple of shots of scotch or, you know, I mean, we're all adults and we all know what we're supposed to do right. And what we're not supposed to do. And, you know, I mean, I know people that have had fantastic BDSM scenes and they've used, you know, a drug of some kind. Uh-huh. Okay, that's about them, all right? Uh-huh. I'm going to be the respectable, you know, member of the BDSM society and say, like, don't use drugs and you know, don't use alcohol. But, you know, I think we all see the big picture as well. And, you know,
but
you got
to
be...
But if you are, you ought to communicate that beforehand. Because to do less than that, it would be really irresponsible.
Yeah, I mean, just know that the ice that you're skating on is a little bit thinner when you add these components to it.
Oh, one final definition I'm looking for is safe word.
Yes, safe word. Okay, so this is also part of the negotiation process. A safe word would be something that is agreed upon for the bottom or the submissive to say when things get too much and the scene needs to stop. And you choose a very specific word or a specific phrase because sometimes dialogue will come out during the course of play and it'll be part of the fun of the scene. Mm-hmm. You know, if the person's saying, no, no, don't do that to me, don't do that right. to me, and, you know, no means yes. Mm-hmm. But, you know, let's say the safe word is red. Red is a common one. You know, when suddenly the person says red, okay, now the scene stops, and if they're a responsible dominant, they'll say, okay, what's going on? They might say, hey, my hands are going numb, or hey, I'm about to vomit, or hey, I'm freaking out. If they're a respectable dom, they will stop the scene immediately, and they'll engage into some aftercare mm-hmm. where the scene will stop, and they will find out what's going on with the submissive, and they will take care of them so that they're left with a positive experience.
Right. I was, as you were talking there, I was thinking that I often use safe words when I'm working with couple counseling, in couple counseling situations, and because one of the things that I encourage my clients to do is to fight fair, and most people don't know how to do that. They know how to bludgeon their, especially the people that they love, and really hurt them emotionally and psychologically. And so the use of a safe word, like when things, we're going to get into this, we're going to discuss this, and it's going to be heated, and sometimes it's going to be angry. But if you use your safe word, I stop. And, you know, I go, you know, to my room or I go, you know, to a quiet place and the discussion ends. And that way, the person who is receiving or part of the discussion can let the other person know that you're coming very close to hurting me.
Okay. Very interesting. Yeah. Very, very similar parameters.
Yes.
That's what I'm just going to discuss.
As you were talking in terms of negotiation and safe word and stuff, I was thinking to myself that it probably would be a really good idea if somebody was unversed in this, that they work with a professional, somebody who knows what's going on in order to get a feel for how all of this happens. I mean, as you were saying that, you know, the questions that you ask the person that you are working with, you know, have you eaten? Are you hydrated? Are you loaded? Are you, do you have back pains? All those kind of things. If I wouldn't have known to ask those questions, and so probably wouldn't have been a really good idea for me to start, you know, tying folks up.
Yeah, well, like I said, as people that are participating in this BDSM world, for lack of a better way of putting it, it's our responsibility to make all the newcomers have as positive an experience as possible.
Uh-huh.
And so there's nothing wrong with you know, approaching somebody and asking these kinds of questions, and you know, I mean, I find it a real honor when someone comes up to me and they just said, you know, I need to talk to you about something. I don't know how to talk about this with anyone else, but you know, I really want to worship my partner's feet. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm obsessed with feet, and I can't stop thinking about his feet, and it's like I want to like lick his feet, and is that normal? And I'll be just like, oh God, it sounds like a great fun thing. You know, can you tell me more about that? Like, have you actually, you know, played with this? Have you tried it? You know,
lots of and make it a giving.
Yeah, and just say like, well, you know, gosh, how exciting! You know, I bet this could be a lot of fun for your partner as well. Like, you know, have you tried this? You know, have you tried like, you know, maybe giving a foot massage? You know, have you tried licking his toes? You know, I'm like, and like when someone approaches me with that with that kind of an issue, yeah, what I try to do is I try to sit there and say, oh my God, you're perfectly normal. How great that you've got this component of yourself. You know, let's like embrace it.
Mm-hmm. And that you actually can identify it.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
How wonderful is that? I mean, so many people, you know, go through life, you know, again, sublimating or disapproving of their eroticism, not owning their eroticism, and being terribly frustrated.
Yeah, and we're at a real advantage now in that we have the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And because of this amazing new tool, which is, you know, a little more than a decade old, it's now possible to locate people all over the world who have the exact same kinks and fetishes that you do.
Mm-hmm.
And now all of a sudden you don't have to have shame about the way you're wired, and you can actually have a sense of community.
Mm-hmm.
Prime example, I myself have a facial hair fetish.
Mm-hmm.
I no word of a lie, I can actually get hard by rubbing another man's mustache or beard.
With your dick?
And no, with my hand. I kid you not.
I
mean,
joke.
With my.
Sorry.
Yeah, you say it's a joke, but I'm popping a boner right now, Richard. Okay, so and don't think I didn't stare at your picture for quite a little while, but.
Well, now I have a beard, so. Neener.
Okay, I want pictures just so you know. But yeah, and I used to have an obsession with facial hair even when I was a little kid, like before I even felt my sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
I would just find myself staring at, you know, cowboys and you know, bear men, and in fact you're going to laugh, but when I grew up I used to love watching the Popeye series.
Mm-hmm.
Because of Bluto.
Uh-huh.
You know, that was the way I, and for the longest time I kept this secret because I thought, okay, there's something that is just not right about me. You know, I mean, that just, like, it doesn't make any kind of sense. You know, and if I told others, like, yeah, I'm into beards, you know, they'd go, okay, well, that's just kind of strange.
Mm-hmm.
Well, through the internet, I was actually able to, like, find other men that, you know, kind of share the same fetish.
Uh-huh.
And I've now, you know, I've actually played with men where we've had this very, very simple but very erotic experience.
Exactly.
with each other's facial hair. A fantastic thing that we have available to us now.
Is that one of the reasons why you wear facial hair?
It is. yeah. Well, it's funny too because of my own my own hormones, I actually wasn't able to grow anything until I reached my 30s.
Wow.
And and it's funny because I have a full beard now as well. And when people come up to me and say, "Oh, I really like this," and they touch it, they don't realize how it's driving me absolutely insane in my body. Like, you know. And I go into this
that
amazing...
I'll keep that in mind for when you visit Seattle.
Careful. Yeah.
So, careful of the things you wish for.
Exactly.
So how did you get started as a Dom?
I actually got started as a dom because I was strictly a boy. I was a submissive.
Uh-huh.
And I got tired of playing with dominants who didn't know what they were doing.
Ah.
That's the honest to God truth. I found myself hooking up with a lot of men who wanted to tie me up because that was what I was into. And, you know, they would start into it, and then I'd be like, oh, this isn't very good. And so then I would say, like, well, here, can I show you, sir, like how I like to, you know, have it done? And then next thing I know, I am topping them in a scene, and they're calling me sir, and, you know, I'm slowly discovering that I'm actually enjoying playing the dominant role, and, you know, that I'm pretty good at it, and, you know, the rest kind of grows from there.
Is there a significant role-playing aspect to your life as a dom? Like daddy boy, master slave?
I guess I would... I would refer to myself as a sir.
Uh-huh.
That would be the common term.
What's the opposite of sir?
A sir and a boy.
Boy. Okay.
Yeah, that would be the terminology. Uh-huh. That's left over from the old leather, the gay leather days.
Uh-huh.
Post World War II. That's a whole other discussion, but I don't really see myself as a master. I don't really see myself as a daddy.
Uh-huh.
That kind of seems to be what fits for me. Mm-hmm. But you know, but it depends. I mean, like I said, it all gets back down to that chemistry that you feel with someone else. And so, if I were to come across somebody who, you know, wanted me to be a particular role for them, and I found that the shoe fit. Sure, I'll try it on. Why not?
I noticed, I just thought of this. I remember seeing this on your site, that you have, I don't even know how to describe it, a Sir Doggy?
I have a pup.
A pup, that's it.
Yes, goodness. Okay.
And we're not talking about canines.
No, okay, so this would be one little, subcomponent of BDSM, of which there are many, that we refer to as puppy play.
Ah.
And what puppy play is, and it's kind of a growing trend right now, this would be play between a dominant and a submissive, where the submissive takes on the characteristics of a dog. And that might mean just crawling on all fours and barking and taking commands from the dominant, who is referred to as the handler. There might be various toys, you know, brought in, like you know, leather hoods in the shape of a dog's head and little paws that are locked on the fists. And there's even butt plugs that have tails attached to them. And different people like to engage in this for different reasons. There are some that they like the humiliation aspect of it. You know, maybe they're a high-ranking official where they, you know, they have to be very sophisticated in their professional life, and so the idea of being forced on all fours and not being able to do anything other than barking, you know, provides some kind of a cathartic balance for them.
Do those
for others,
ever pee on your boots?
Mine hasn't. he would be hit with a rolled up newspaper. But I have a pup named Argo, and that's who you see on
Argo,
my site. Yeah, it's short for Argonaut, and Argo is none other than Paul Chiantar, our Mr. Leatherman Toronto of 2002.
Oh.
And for Paul, he likes engaging in this with me because Paul is very much an overprocessor in everyday life. And for him, he loves putting on the dog hood and just being very much in the moment and being very, very playful.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like he puts on the hood and it puts on the persona where he doesn't have to do anything else except, you know, be everything that's in the present moment. And
it's like acting then, yes? In a way.
Very much so. Or like I equate it with, say, like the trance and ritual that you see in Bali.
Yes.
You know, where the shamans would put on a mask of some sort of a spirit and they would invoke the spirit by putting on the mask, and that would create a cathartic experience for all parties involved. You know, it's kind of the same thing. I'm not saying that pup play is a direct descendant of
Yeah.
trance and ritual in Bali, but it's the same idea.
Yeah. And like we brought up last week, too, I mean, there's intimate connections between all the stuff that we are talking about in this series, Power Play and Power Exchange, BDSM, and other expressions, religion, sexuality, arts, way people communicate and express themselves. So it's a good connection to make, it seems to me.
The bottom line is it's supposed to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a reason why we call it play,
and
there's a reason why the things involved are referred to as toys. And you know, people try very hard to get their head around this stuff, and they politicize it. And you know, I try to tell people that are newbies in this that what we're doing is not really anything more than just grown-up cowboys and Indians.
Right.
You know, I mean, when we were kids, when we played these kinds of role-playing games, we did it 120%, and you know, we did it with full conviction, and we became better children as a result of engaging in that space.
And it allowed us to exercise parts of ourselves that weren't getting exercised. I mean, like if we were playing cowboys and Indians, I mean, that masculinity, at least from a boy's point of view, you know, to test out his masculinity, to play with that, to see what the parameters of that are.
Yeah. And so we're just doing the same thing, except now we have heightened sensitivities, and we have hormones and bits of arousal, and we also have
expensive
the capacity
toys.
To... Well, yeah, but I think you get what you pay for, you know.
Right.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, you mentioned something just a little while ago that I want to pick up on. And when I hear from people who are thinking about getting into the life... I always suggest that they connect with an established dom or sub for some tutelage. Have you ever taken a novice under your wing and showed him the ropes, as it were?
Oh gosh, many times. Many times. There's no greater honor in my book. I do get approached a lot. I get a lot of emails, especially as a result of my website and my podcast.
Like my emails, don't you know?
Yes, exactly. And people ask me questions. Like they'll say, "I'm in this part of the world, and I very much would like to talk to other people that are into the same thing that I'm into. And here is what I'm into. Can you give me a recommendation on how to start?" And that's a great place to be.
Absolutely.
I'll refer them to places that I've gone where I've learned, or people that I know that give classes. And I encourage them like to go and ask questions. You know, go to these dungeon parties or these leather bars and, you know, respectfully go up to the person and ask, "Hey, how do you do what you're doing? Or does that feel good?" And 9 times out of 10, they'll be very honored that you asked them.
Right. Many doms make it a profession. Or make a profession out of their lifestyle. Are you a pro?
I am not. You mean like am I an escort?
No, not necessarily an escort, but you know, do people pay you for your services?
People have paid me to teach classes,
right.
And I guess, I mean, I certainly have made money on the BDSM modeling that I've done.
Ah, interesting.
But no, I wouldn't say I'm a professional. The thing about being a professional is, and there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, my good friend Mistress Victoria is a very respectable dominatrix here in the city. When you are providing a service for someone else, and there's money involved, the playing field is altered a little bit. You're being given money to make a fantastic experience for somebody else. And yes, you're being paid to be the dominant, but technically you're not.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay, yeah. So it's just, I'm not saying I'm opposed to the idea, but just, it changes the playing field.
Yes.
Yeah,
it
so that's why.
Can you provide us a list of some of the things that you are into as a dom?
Okay, well, there's definitely bondage. That would be one of my absolute most favorite things. I'm very much into the puppy play. I do like all kinds of role playing. I get into all kinds of uniforms, be they military or sports uniforms, what have you. I like rubber.
Roman collars and cassocks?
Sure.
Good idea.
Why not?
Film.
Yeah, you know. Let's see. I like rubber and I like latex. Let's see. I like hot wax and some humiliation.
And a nice Bordeaux.
Absolutely. And a fine Stilton, and especially coffee with chocolate fingers. Yeah.
Where do you practice your art?
Oh, gosh. Well, at the person's bedroom. Many people that are into this will have a place in their house that will be designated as their dungeon or their playroom, where these things can happen. But I've also played in the bar, and but some of the most fun I've had have been in inopportune places, like say over the back of an airplane, or or an alleyway, or because, well, you know, as we know, there is something delightfully arousing about the possibility of getting in trouble, quote unquote.
Exactly.
You know, so don't think I don't work that to my advantage.
For those of us in the gay community, well, not just in the gay community, but there's such a thing as a leather title holder. Are you a title holder?
I was a leather title holder back in 2007.
Uh-huh.
I represented our local leather bar here in Toronto at the Black Eagle.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So I suppose that you have a pretty high profile in the kink and or gay communities in Toronto.
That's what they keep telling me. I'm not sure if I'm
So you're not a shrinking violet. You're not hiding your light under a bushel basket, as they say.
No, I don't know, Richard. I can't. I mean, I can't really look at myself objectively. But you know, I mean, I would say that. I mean, I get emails from all over the world, and I want to ask these people, how did you find me? But you know, I guess that's my life, so I have to take responsibility for it.
Stick around, because lots more people from Dr. Dick is going to find you too.
Bring it on.
Do you play with both women and men?
I have played with women. Mm-hmm. I have never had sex with women, but how can I put this? I'm most interested in the chemistry that happens between me and other men.
I see. Good, good, good.
Now, that being said, there are certain women I know who I really, really like their energy, and I would get off having an experience at their hands.
Right.
And
we're not talking about genital play necessarily. I mean, you can do BDSM and power play and power exchange and not be genitally active, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, one of my greatest teachers, and she's also one of my dearest friends, I mean, is a woman, you know, who is basically the woman responsible for having taught me all I know about rope. And I've done on-stage scenes and demonstrations with her that were a very erotic experience for me.
Yes.
That you know, was at her hands.
Right.
So yeah, but generally speaking, it's mostly with men that I enjoy.
So is it safe to assume that you don't play with every Tom, Dick, or Mary who approaches you?
Yes, that is correct.
How do you discern between the ones that you encourage and the ones that you discourage?
Well, you know, that's not a requirement, but it certainly helps. Well, one thing that happens when you have greater visibility and you start to become invited to more events and to do public demonstrations and to teach is that people then see you as a carnival ride, or as Midori puts it, a public utility.
Yeah.
And I had an experience about a year ago where I was doing a a public play scene at this Leather and Fetish group. It was actually in Winnipeg. And what was happening is I was given two very, very sexy boys to play with on stage. And, you know, people could watch and people could interact. And it was great fun, and I enjoyed myself immensely. But what was happening is that people were coming up to me and informing me that they would like to be next. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, a sir would come up to me and they would say, you know, Sir Dart, it's a great pleasure to meet you. If you don't mind, I would love to watch you tie up my boy. And on one hand, I'm very honored that they would ask me, but they have to take into account that there's a big possibility that I may not have any kind of chemistry with the person involved, and
that's essential.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think it's perfectly okay to simply say no because you don't feel something, you know, with the person. I think it lessens your experience to do something to someone else simply out of charity.
Right.
That's a bit of a harsh way of putting it, but
a mercy fuck.
Basically. Yeah, I mean it's you know, like there's a gentleman on the East Coast who he's excellent at rope bondage, and he asks me all the time if I would allow him to tie me up, and the bottom line is I just don't have any interest, and I. Finally, one day, I said, I'm really, really honored that you're asking me, but I'm just not feeling it, so I'm going to say no. And he got quite nasty,
a woman
said some
burned, right?
Yeah, and you know, and said some very, very nasty things to me, and then told me that I'm missing out and all that. And it's, you know, it's like you that's the one thing about this playing field is you have to be comfortable with hearing the word no, and you have to honor someone, you know, for that.
Yeah.
So so that would be the parameters that I might, you know, say no to somebody.
So I know we touched on this a little while ago, but I really want to go back to this because I know that a lot of people in my audience are thinking along these lines. Let's just say that I or someone in my audience is a rank amateur and I didn't have a clue about the correct vocabulary or subculture etiquette.
Mm-hmm.
But I did know that I had this sub streak, or that I wanted to try my hand at being a dom, or I just wanted to investigate the whole notion of power play. Would you be someone I could turn to?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. That's getting back to what I said earlier. I mean, that's a very, very honorable position to be in. You know, to be someone's, you know, initial guide, and you know, steer them in the right direction. There were some really notable individuals that were that way for me.
Exactly.
When
that
I started this path.
Yeah,
and so I do them the honor by continuing.
So how would a rank amateur like me or anyone else approach you? Do you take into account that not everyone will know how to or where to begin his or her conversation with you? Would we stumble around a lot, and would you help us, you know, form our questions?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I mean, this is just me personally, but I would put someone at great ease. Like, say, you know, don't worry about using improper terminology. You're not going to be fined.
Quite yet.
You know, yeah, I mean, as far as the subculture etiquette, what I tell people is, I said, just use the principles that Emily Post talked about. And that will carry you further than half this stuff. I mean, like, you know, for instance, when, you know, there are some dominants that like to be referred to as master. Some like to be referred to as sir. Some like to be referred to as madam, or mistress. Okay, so let's say you don't know how to refer to them. Well, it's perfectly okay to sit there and say, well, it's nice to meet you, such and such. How do you like to be addressed? I mean, that's what you would do with, say, a judge or a politician from another country, or you know, what have you. There's nothing wrong with that. Just saying please and thank you, not interrupting someone. You know, the one thing you don't want to ever do is interrupt somebody's scene to ask questions. You want to wait until they're done. And then just, you know, kindly ask someone for their time, saying, hey, I really was quite intrigued by what I was watching. Could I ask you a couple of questions? oh gosh, you know, that flogger you were using just looks incredible. May I touch it? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, just it's good old fashioned common sense. Mm-hmm. That's a good place to start.
I always tell the people that write to me, you know, that when they approach this or any other alternative lifestyle that they don't understand fully but they feel drawn to, that they should leave their judgments outside, because they are a guest in this world until they are welcomed as a participant. Yeah. And a lot of people, you know, would say, you know, I'm really into, you know, being a dom or a sub in a heterosexual situation, but this gay stuff, that really freaks me out.
Yeah.
You know, that's not a good place to begin, it doesn't
right.
seem to me.
Right. Yeah, and I would just, you know, I would also, like, steer them in the right direction. Like, first of all, I would find out, okay, what are these feelings you have? Okay, like what is it that you can't stop thinking about? What is it that you're jacking off to secretly at night that you don't tell anybody? And then I would say, like, okay, and why do you think there's something wrong with that? Mm-hmm. Okay, like, well, okay, yes, I mean, okay, yeah, so you don't know of anyone else that's into that, or that's not mainstream, but what makes you think that there's anything wrong with that? You're not hurting anybody. One of the people that I interview in one of my podcasts is a gentleman who goes by the name of Buster. And Buster has a fetish for balloons.
He actually has fetishized
balloons. He likes to writhe around them. He likes to genitally violate them. He likes to writhe around them until they pop. He's been this way all his life. On my podcast, he tells a story about how when he first started exploring his body, he would actually keep a bag of balloons under his bed. Mm-hmm. And what I love about Buster is he just owns who he is. He doesn't have any shame about it. He's like, this is just the way I'm wired, and I have so much fun doing it. And, you know, now he has this incredible following where these big parties, you know, of men and women that come together and they all play with balloons, you know, as a sexual experience. I say, why not?
I knew about this many years ago and actually put it in one of the movies that I made, Daddy-O Production movies.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's called Last Call. It was on a dance floor in a bar, and it was kind of like a little orgy scene, and
yes.
There was a balloon drop. It was wonderful.
Really?
It was very hot.
Yeah. But mostly when someone first, you know, approaches me, that I want to find out what it is they're into, and then I want to ask them, okay, well, why do you think there's something wrong with that? Okay, well, you know, there's other people that are into that too. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, here's how you find them.
Yeah.
And then just watch them light up.
Yes.
That's fun, yeah.
Who are your sexual heroes?
Oh, gosh. There's Midori, who started off as a teacher of mine, and now she's one of my best friends. She's a sexuality author and educator. In fact, she has a website, planetmidori.com. And she was kind of the first person to actually put in printed form instructional manuals on how to erotically tie up your partner. Hmm. And
a well-known name, Midori.
Very much so, yeah. And it just, she was such an inspiration to me when I first went to her, because, you know, she speaks of sexuality as something that is meant to be enjoyed and nurtured and to be educated and inspired about. Mm. And so she was kind of the first person that made me feel like, oh my God, this is me. Thank God this is how I'm wired. Gosh, when I die, I want to be reincarnated as me, because it's so cool to be me. Yeah. She's just a very, very sexy woman. I mean, to see the pictures of her, and I've actually performed with her on stage, and there's just a tremendous amount of sexiness that emanates from her. So, yeah. So she would be one. I would say Tom of Finland mm-hmm. would be another, just because his art was such a celebration of the gay leather energy mm-hmm. that was arousing to me
at a time and when no one else was doing it.
Exactly, the pictures are celebrations of that element of man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the mustaches and the, you know, the thick butts and the, you know, the leather uniforms. It's just very, very tasty.
Oh, you do go on, sir.
I do. And actually, this is going to sound wild, but my third sexual hero would be my mother.
No kidding. Good for you. Interesting.
Yeah. Well, we were both my parents were very sex positive individuals.
Wow.
And I grew up in a household where you know, both my parents were artists.
Mm-hmm.
And so sex was something that was talked about very openly, and, you know, the body was something that was meant to be enjoyed because both my parents were constantly painting nudes,
uh-huh.
you know, that were in the house posing, and they weren't always perfect bodies. I mean, you know, sometimes they were kind of large, portly, you know,
right.
bodies, but that was beautiful in and of itself.
Yes.
And I remember when I first started to go through puberty, and I first started having wet dreams, and my mother didn't, I never told her that I was having wet dreams, but my mother knew that Dart was going through the changes, and she,
I love it.
She, yes, exactly, she lent me her copy of The Joy of Sex.
Wow.
And she said, just look through this, there's going to be things in there that are interesting to you, and there's going to be things in there that repulse you, and it's all okay, and it's all meant to be enjoyed, and it's, you get the pleasure of finding out where your buttons are, and it's not my business, it's not your father's business, it's only your business, but it's business that is meant to be pleasurable.
Wow.
And I've never lost that. And so yeah, when I came into my kinky feelings, it was sort of a natural transition. Like, yeah, I enjoy mustaches, I enjoy seeing a man tied up, I enjoy seeing a man on all fours with a dog hood on. That's my mother's fault.
Well, our hat is off to your mother. Good for her.
Yes.
Listen, can you give us your website address and walk us around a bit?
Yes. So it's www.dartsdomain, that's spelled DartsDomain.com. And this is still very much a work in progress. So we have the About Me section, where this is just a very, very quick spiel about the way I'm wired and, you know, the way I see things. And like I said, this is a constant work in progress, so I'm constantly, you know, adding elements to this little section. Then there's the photos section, which I'm constantly up. I thought you'd like that one. photos that have been taken over the years by various friends and accomplished photographers over the years. There's a great little photo spread of me and Argo that you can see, and there's a great photographer in New York. Her name is Michelle Scherchuk. She has a website called photodiva.com, and there's a lot of photographs done by her that have quite a little edge to them. And then there's some pictures from some demonstrations that I've done. And obviously, I did start off as a boy, so there's plenty of pictures of me in the submissive role as well, if that's something you want to see. There is a video section. We do have video of me. We just haven't uploaded it yet. So, like I said, this is a work in progress. There will be some added there shortly. And then there's the blog, and this is where you will see the podcasts that I've done over the past few months. And there's also some interesting sexual entries of some experiences I've had over the years. And yeah, just a little bit about the way my mind ticks. Yeah.
And that, it's all that is why we invited you, or I invited you, to join us as the inaugural podcast in this series. And I'm exceptionally grateful for so much of your precious time. Thank you. And,
thank you, Richard. This was a tremendous honor. And hopefully people can listen to this, and somewhere can have a more positive experience as a result of
right.
what we talk about.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
So we are all the richer for the experience. So I thank you, and let's stay in contact, and we will be seeing you in cyberspace.
Absolutely. I hope so.
Thank you so much.
Yes, merci beaucoup.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next week for more Sex Advice with an Edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library.
You haven't got the feel of this at all, lad. Use all your voices when I bellow, bellow back.
Okay, I'll try. Listen up, buckaroos. Thanks to this amazing technology, you'll be able to watch your choice of smut from the comfort of your own home. With just a little prompting from you, they're going to come gushing out of your computer like nobody's business. Check it out. You'll find a link to this fabulous sex resource right there in the header of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the tab that reads Video on Demand. There is no membership fee. This is a pay-per-minute kind of deal. And look for all of Dr. Dick's podcasts on iTunes. You'll find me in the podcast section under Health, subcategory, Sexuality. Or just search for Dr. Dick's Sex Advice. Don't forget to subscribe. And I invite you to leave a comment when you do. Until next time, remember, sex is good. And good sex, that's even better. Over and out.